Well, welcome everyone. My name is Dr. Ashley Bourgeois. I'm a board certified veterinary dermatologist practicing in Portland, Oregon with Animal Dermatology Clinic. I am very excited, not only as a person that has their own podcast and hosting, but I'm very excited to get to really speak to two technicians and learn about the way that they utilize themselves in the clinic, both being in dermatology clinics. So we're going to start by just letting these lovely ladies introduce themselves. Tell me about, why you made the switch from general practice to dermatology, where you're practicing, and let's just say like your most favorite thing about dermatology.
Hi, my name is Emily Estrada. I've been working in derm for almost 10 years, and I switched to derm because I was curious about it and wanted to find more about this mysterious world that I didn't learn a lot about in school. And one of my favorite things, surprisingly, is when ringworm comes through because I get to
That's kind of strange, but
well,
that's fine.
I get
Thank
to
you.
investigate fungal cultures, and fungi are my favorite.
That 100% means you should be in dermatology.
I'm a nerd.
Yes, if that is your love, if that is your love. Excellent. Nine.
Hi, I'm Kanane Chika. I have been working at dermatology for almost 2 years now. I made the switch from general practice because I was just looking for a change and kind of wanting to really hone in on my skills and, take my education to another level, which dermatology definitely has done for me. I've learned a lot already in almost the 2 years I've been there. I'd say my favorite thing right now is just kind of seeing when they come in, and they're uncomfortable and they come back and they just look amazing. And I love being a part of that treatment plan for them.
I like to call it their glamour shots, like when they come in for their after and they look so much better. Like sometimes on the initial exam, I'm like, this is your before, because we have some work to do, but I love the glamour after shot. When you kind of knew that you wanted to maybe do something a bit different than general practice, why? Because there's so many amazing specialties. What attracted you to derm? Is it because you've done a lot in general practice and it interested you? Like, what made you really think, okay, if I'm going to make the switch, I want to try out dermatology?
Well, to be completely honest, I didn't know too much about dermatology, so I was definitely looking for the challenge of it. And it definitely has been a challenge, but a great challenge. Like, I've learned a lot, and definitely with the doctors and the technicians and things like that, they've taught me a great deal. And I've been doing general practice for 10 years, and I'm still learning so much more.
Yeah, that's so awesome. We should always be learning, right? Like even as a person who's only done derm for now and a long time, I've always finding myself learning from my technicians, my clients, right? Just different ways to do things, different ways that kind of reinvigorate my love for veterinary dermatology. So that's really awesome. Now, both of your experiences from working in general practice and dermatology, how do you find being in a dermatology practice the day to day is different? Because there's a ton of derm that you do in general practice. So what do you think are some of the differences on a daily basis that happen in a specialty clinic?
I definitely see as far as the difference is, sometimes the questions we ask, the examination, there's a lot of the same basics, as far as listening to the patient, things like that. But definitely, I would say, like, when we're looking at the ears, that's a little bit more thorough than I would say that I notice at general practice, especially when, in general practice, they're usually coming in with something a little more specific. So in my experience, we didn't always look in ears. For dermatology, that's always part of the exam.
What about you, Emily?
I would echo the same thing that we're just being a little bit more specific with what we're looking at here. And like Kamani said, clients will come in for, oh, my pet has needs their vaccinations, and also there's this issue. And but here at Derm, it's more of, we know that this is the issue, so let's go ahead and take the time of this initial consultation appointment to really investigate what's going on with that specific problem.
I'm gonna guess that happens a lot in general practice. The go to close the door. Oh, and right? Like, oh, and I always like when dermatology clients try to do that to me. They're like, oh, and they're vomiting. I'm like, oh, that's not me. You don't want, unless it's the food allergy, like you do not want me handling that. I don't even remember what we're supposed to do anymore. Do you ever miss like having those other things, like the coughing cat, the diarrhea dog? Not really.
I would say not really, because that was kind of what I was, the change I was looking for when I went to dermatology. So, no.
If you were to go, let's say, back to general practice, like you just decided you want to go back to general practice and take what you've learned from dermatology and bring it into that practice, like what do you think you would change on how the approach is in general practice? Totally understanding every practice is different, every client is different, every derm practice is different. But what do you think you would take now spending time in a specialty practice that you would change from like a day-to-day dermatology approach if you were to go back?
I think probably just being a little bit more thorough with asking a little more specific questions on whatever condition they're being presented for, and trying to be a bit more insistent on flea control.
Oh, that's nice. Support. What about you?
I think going into dermatology has made me realize things that I might have overlooked a little bit more in general practice, especially like itch. We see it in general practice, of course, but even in my own pet, I kind of noticed and was like, you know, I always thought she was itchy, but now after being at dermatology, I've kind of started to look at signs where it's like, oh, that's more than just itching.
Yeah.
And things like that. So I definitely feel like the way I look at things, patients with itch, allergy is very different now.
I always love when our technicians spend some time with us, right? Because they go in and get so much of the history. We really love to teach when we're utilizing our technicians. So it's a lot of, well, why? And, you know, what are you seeing under the microscope? What are you trying to incorporate with that? And what I love is like, in general practice, you very much can do this too, is when my technicians come in and they'll like give me a new file. And they're like, here's your flea allergic cat, you know, like, oh, it's probably pemphigus. Like, they already know. Like, I'm like, why am I here? Like, you don't even need me at this point. I'm just the person that signs the scripts, because they're so good. I think when you get so repetitive and you're curious and you ask questions, right, and hopefully you're all within facilities, you can do that, because I think it's so important, mm-hmm. like, that we utilize technicians to their ability is also that they learn and know why, mm-hmm. right, so that you know the purpose. And for me, I'm like, if I'm suggesting things that are certain costs and my technicians are going in with an estimate, like I want them to feel like super confident of why, because I know you guys get the brunt of it, right? They're like, how much is it? I'm like, oh, my technician will be right back in the estimate. But like, I know you guys are getting the brunt of it. And if I can give my technicians the confidence to be like, no, this is why this is really important. Mm-hmm. You know, this is why that culture really matters. This is why the flea prevention really does matter. I know they're indoor and live in a gated community, but it actually really is important. I think that's everything. And you guys really just, honestly, I think sometimes the clients put more trust in you guys than us as clinicians, right? Because you guys are really the ones going through that with them, mm-hmm. which is awesome. So, as technicians for Animal Dermatology Group in Pasadena, California, so we're part of the same company, you know, we are doing just more advanced things as specialists, whether it's skin testing, using different sedation protocols, depending on what your experience is with them. What are some of the top things you see as far as medications or diagnostics being in a specialty practice that you have utilized?
For us, we definitely do a lot of skin cytologies. Skin and ear cytologies is probably our most important diagnostic test that we do. And our doctors look at them in-house. So we'll have an answer of what kind of skin infection or issues going on with at the skin level immediately with the client. And they'll know those results within minutes. That's probably the most basic and most important test that we could do in dermatology and in GP too. It's tough to say, yes, that skin infection is bacteria when you don't take a cytology. So it's certainly very important to take one, so you know exactly what you're treating and you're treating it effectively and appropriately.
And do you feel comfortable speaking on cytology and knowing how it is important for us if the client starts like questioning, like, do you feel, you know, we all get it, right? Like, do they really need to do that cytology? Do you feel confident in really diving in through your experience of explaining why we need to do it, even if they look better or even if it's always been yeast in the past? Like, do you feel comfortable with that?
Oh, for sure, because we've seen many times that, you know, fluffies come in 6 months ago with a bacterial infection, they were treated with this antibiotic, why wouldn't it work again? Well, that was 6 months ago. the skin can change for sure. It could be bacteria and yeast this time, or just yeast. And we all know antibiotics don't work on yeast. So what's the purpose of putting them on an antibiotic course? And it's not going to do anything. So it's definitely really important to drive home the point that the infections can and will change, and you really need to treat it appropriately. And sometimes there may not be infection presence. It can lead to something else, of like autoimmune conditions that are actually present causing these skin conditions.
Yeah, the skin changes, right? Like, I mean, I've had cases that have been allergies for years, and all of a sudden they develop cutaneous lymphoma, you know, which is also red and itchy. So these things can really be mimickers even for us.
Yeah.
What about you as far as advanced diagnostics, sedation protocols, anything that you have found interesting being in a derm practice?
Kind of just to mirror what Emmy said regarding the cytologies, how we will always run cytologies. I definitely like to promote that to clients, especially just because, you know, they have so many questions. And for me, I just feel like, you know, we run those cytologies, we're able to get more answers and hopefully, you know, be able to tailor the treatment plan for that patient. Also, kind of like what Emmy said, you know, if it might not be a bacterial infection, we don't want to just give the patient something they may not need.
That's awesome. And before we even started chatting, we were talking a little bit about differences in sedation protocols, like even between doctors at your own clinic, right? Because we never can do things the same for you guys to keep your lives easy. We all have to keep, I prefer this, but I prefer this. And neither one of us are changing. But you talked a bit about some experience with Zen Alpha as a sedation. Can you speak on that? Just, I know you said one of the doctors really loves it, and kind of why she likes it and what your experience with that sedation medication has been.
Yeah, we do. What I personally really like about that sedation is the quick recovery time. Just because for me as a technician, when I am with a patient, and I like to see them wake up as fast as possible and then be able to monitor them and things like that. I always worry a little bit if we're taking a little bit too long or anything like that. So I definitely love the sedation where they kind of just pop up quickly.
And do you feel like some of the side effects compared to other sedations are less based on how Zen Alpha works?
Definitely. I definitely think it's less.
Which ones do you think you see, like blood pressure?
Blood pressure is a big one, especially because, you know, when I was a newer technician, certain sedations would make me very nervous. I mean, I guess still, but, you know, with experience, you kind of just know what to look out for. So I definitely appreciate how Zen Alpha doesn't make me have to worry about that as quite as much.
Now, you guys had mentioned flea control a bit, and I know flea control sounds like kind of boring, but super important, right? I mean, listen, I don't want to have to do the flea allergy talk all day, every day either. But when you do have those clients who have flea Nile, right? We all know it happens and exists. I've literally been told my pet's in a gated community, so they can't have fleas. And I said, I don't think that the flea cares about your gate. But when you get those patients, because we always experience them, knowing it is extremely important, right? Whether we're ruling out a flea allergy or a concurrent flea allergy, I think sometimes that's what I like to teach too, is a lot of these allergic patients, they have multiple allergies. So if we're not controlling the thing that we are able to control, which flea is a huge portion of that, we really could end up with more infections. We can end up not controlling them as well. So when you have that patient, I'll leave it up to you two who wants to take this on. But when you have that client that says, I don't know, really, like, it's not fleas. I never see them. My other pet's not itchy. What do you have as far as tips to convince them it is important?
Well, I think it's important to make, with any kind of feedback you get from the client, to make them know that they're heard with their concerns, and not just saying, like, no, your pet has to be on flea control. That's the end all be all of. It's important to make sure that they know that their concerns are heard. And sure, if they're not going to move on their insistence on not being on flea control, fine. We're not going to, you know, pin them to the wall and say, no, you got to have it. It's
so it'd be great. Some of them, valuing my children.
Yeah. But, you know, we could say one way that we can be flexible with about that is saying, okay, we won't do flea control now. We'll treat whatever issue we're currently dealing with. And then in a month, 2 months from now, if we're still not getting the control with itch infection that we need, we really need to seriously consider that flea control and have a more serious talk about getting your pet on a flea preventative. And also working with them, seeing, do they prefer topical or systemic? There are very different options available that are prescription only and viable over the counter ones too. So there are ways to sort of make the flea preventative talk more convincing to them. So that way a client knows there are multiple routes. There isn't just this oral systemic flea control that they might think might poison their pet. You know, there are definitely ways to work around the flea control issue so it's a bit more appeasing to them.
Yeah, that's great. I think what also can be helpful is with these ISOX ASLEs we have now, right, which predominantly is what most of us are recommending, really focusing on like the ectoparasite portion of it. So sometimes I hardly even safely, I'm like, ectoparasites. Because then it's like, well, mites and Kylet's yell, right? All these things that are technically off-label, but we know based on research and in other countries that do have it on the label, mm-hmm. are very effective. So sometimes I think it's just taking the stigma away from that.
Yeah.
I also have a flea allergic dog, so I like to use her as an example. Like, you have your own flea allergic pet. Mm-hmm. Like, I've also never seen fleas. She is a pity princess. She goes outside, but she got a pretty cush life. And if I miss her flea control, by a couple of days, she's chewing her butt. And I miss her flea control more often than I'd like to admit, because we're all busy, right? So it's really nice, I think, when you said empathizing with them and making sure they feel heard. I think that's huge. And as a clinician, I mean, we just lose the battle sometimes. And you, like you said, as much as we'd love to, you can't force it.
Yeah.
So it is just having that conversation and not being afraid to reopen that conversation either. Like, on the next exam, it's like, remember when we talked about that? Like, you're still chewing their butt. Like, I do think we should probably really reconsider having that conversation. Mm-hmm. We do know a huge part of allergy management is multimodal approach. You know, as dermatologists, we rarely are giving you guys a treatment plan to go over with the client that says one medication in the end, right? Okay. It's like a flea prevention and a topical and, you know, skin barrier repair, and we're going to allergy test them and a diet. So the multimodal approach is really key because there's so many different factors that affect allergic patients. Skin barrier, increased itch, microbiome being off. Mm-hmm. So what is your guys' suggestions when we're talking about that to a client of balancing? Like, let's say I'm the clinician that says, okay, I'd really like you to talk to them about bathing once a week, being on good flea control, and starting an allergy medication, and then let's give them an estrogen to skin test too. How do you approach that conversation with the client, knowing it can be quite overwhelming?
I definitely, when I talk to them, like to go ahead and let them know that, you know, we're here to see what is best for not only their pets, but also for them. So I really like that we tailor-made our treatment plans for them, give them different options. You know, as far as topicals as well, I like that there's a bunch of different topicals. So like mousse, wipes, different shampoos, depending on, you know, the issue at hand. And then as far as the allergy testing, you know, that's a long-term thing. And I always say, you know, try to comfort them and let them know that a decision doesn't always have to be made right away. And that we're always here for any questions. I really try to give them all the information they may need. You know, if they need to talk about it further, written things as well. I know for myself, if I hear too much, I get overwhelmed. So I'll usually, you know, kind of go everything verbally and then I'll, you know, have it print out as well because I'm very visual. So I like to kind of have them understand on more than one level.
And do you have preset handouts through the clinic that you find helpful? Because again, we're all short on time.
Yeah.
So just that you can just print and kind of give them time to digest and find that really useful compared to just saying everything in the,
exactly.
the clinic.
Yeah. So I'll usually go over depending on what type of allergy test that the doctor is recommending. And then at that point, you know, if we're doing the immunotherapy, that's also going to be tailor-made for that. Not only the patient, but their family, you know, what's going to work best for them and their lifestyle as well.
And we talk about like topical therapy, because you mentioned like topicals, which, you know, we're dermatologists, mm-hmm. this is skin we love.
Yep.
Let's say we're treating like a pyoderma, a bacterial skin infection. We want some chlorhexidine. We're going to do something like Trizchlor for, you know, bathing versus mousse. Like, what are the questions or thoughts that you guys have that you really discuss with the owners to know what the best route's going to be. Because I agree, it's great we have so many different formulations, but we just really need to design that plan for something that will actually help them. So are there certain like questions you ask if you're going to do like a mousse versus a white versus a shampoo?
I think it's very important to check with the client what they're able to do, because even though our doctors and our techs are the ones that are putting this plan together to help their pet with whatever infection they've got, ultimately it's going to be the owners that are executing it and taking the major work from our hands. So we always want to make sure that whatever treatment that we have in place, that we ask them, what do you think would be most feasible for you and Fluffy? And do you think wipes or a mousse or spray would work best? And if they say spray, I always, with every pet, every dog that comes through, I always warn them, like, if Fluffy does not like the spray sensation, just put it on a gauze soft towel, soak that, gently wipe. There are ways to work around it. If you think that a spray will work first, but, you know, turns out Fluffy does not like that spray sensation, because my dog did not like a spray sensation. He thought I was personally attacking him. So I've learned we're gonna mention that to everyone, because, you know, Fluffy could be very terrified of that spray sensation. So it's always important to know, ask them what they're able to do at home, especially if you have a client that's impaired with whatever issue that they have going on. Maybe they can't do topicals every single day. That would be an ideal world where you can do sprays, mousse, whatever it is, once a day, and topical ear drops, and bathing once weekly, and cleaning the ears once a week. That's a lot of labor intensive work to do. If someone just doesn't have the time or the ability to do it, then you need to adjust your care plan to what can work for not only the pet, but for the client too.
That's great. It is really important just to make sure we ask them what is possible. I always like to say the best plan is the one that will actually happen. Mm-hmm. So though I love bathing, you know, if they say I cannot bathe, and I never assume, because I have had owners where I'm like, I don't know if they'll want to bathe this like great day and they have. And they'll be like, my son lives next door. I love this dog and he will bathe it every day for you. So you always have to ask too. You cannot assume. I have been so wrong on like an owner being like, they won't bathe. They're like, I would absolutely bathe. And another one where I'm like, oh, they're going to do everything asked. They're like, I will not put this dog in a bathtub. Mm-hmm. So you never know. So we know what's really important about dermatology is definitely communication. Mm-hmm. Like it or not, if you're doing something for derm, you're probably in it for the long haul, right? Mm-hmm. Like, unless it's scabies or maybe dermatophyte, it's probably a lifelong thing we're managing. So I know that what could be difficult and what our technicians handle a lot, and I would assume you guys do too, are those lovely follow-up phone calls when they're not in the clinic, but Miss Jones is calling because she's upset because there's another ear infection. So how do you navigate that? Obviously being in a busy clinic, but you're dealing with a frustrated client because it is a long-term thing that we're dealing with. How do you guys have those conversations? Let's just say it's an allergic patient and they're flaring with an ear infection again. Like, how do you kind of work with the owner to maybe calm down, you know, the frustration, and also like make a plan of what we need to do next?
Well, I think bringing up the point I made earlier of making sure that they know that they're heard, because in my experience, most of clients that call angry and frustrated are just want someone to hear their complaint. And most of the time, they're just frustrated of, I've dealt with this ear infection, skin infection for 6 months already, 2 years, and we're still dealing with the same problem. It hasn't improved at all, despite everything that we're doing, and nothing has changed. Why hasn't anything changed? So when I come across those kinds of conversations, I always make sure that the clients know, like, you're absolutely right. This has been tough for you. And instead of saying, you know, I'm sorry, it hasn't worked, that kind of, to me, gives it a bit of a negative tone. I instead try to make it more positive and proactive. So I'll tell them, I know you have been dealing with this for a while, so let me give the update to the doctor and we can see what we can do to change up the treatment plan so Fluffy can be more comfortable for you, and we can make some changes so that way we can adjust our plan so things can we can work things differently so it can head in the better direction.
Yeah, I think empathy and just reminding They have a chronic disease. Flare-ups are bound to happen even with well-controlled allergic pets. It happens. My dog just got through a flare and literally aborted dermatologist. My husband says that maybe we should get a second opinion on her because I tend to just be like, she's fine. And then she breaks out with like a raging pyoderma. I'm like, oh, whoops. But to your point about like the frustration with clients and empathizing with them, compliance is a huge thing too, right? Mm-hmm. Like we hear a lot about compliance. We're getting great products out for like flea, tick, heartworm. But compliance in a long-term specialty like dermatology is always a struggle. Because like you said, we're asking them to do a lot. You know, not everyone has the bandwidth for that. Mm-hmm. So we have been really fortunate that there have been some advancements and things that are helpful for compliance. Let's focus, for example, on like ears. So have you guys had experience with like the Duodic product mm-hmm. and utilizing that? If you guys aren't aware, it's a product that's come out that just has a steroid and an anti-yeast medication in it, no antibiotic. So when we have those like flare-ups of yeastotitis, we actually do have a commercial product now available where we don't have to expose them to an antibiotic, mm-hmm. but it also makes it so they don't have to do anything at home.
Yeah.
So you get mm-hmm. one application a week later to reapply it, very similar to Osurnia, mm-hmm. and then it is good for a month and a half, 45 days from that first application. So what's been your experience having that option for these yeastotitis cases?
I mean, I definitely think it's great. And then also just, and after the first time he already knew, he was running away from me. So that's also how I like to go ahead and kind of present it in the fact that, you know, you're not going to have to apply anything in the ears. And I think that's really important, you know, as far as, like Emmy said, that we're really asking a lot of these pet owners and, you know, we don't want their relationship with their pet to change. You know, sometimes they could get a little upset. And then they just run away from me. So that's definitely like how I like to present it. And that's, I mean, as an owner, that's what I would like is something that the least I have to do, the better.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about compliance. So Duodic is off label for cats. So it's just labeled for dogs, but I know what you're trying to relate. And it's off label if the, tympanic membrane is ruptured.
Yes.
But something that is available for cats. We talk a lot about the amazing advancements we've had in dermatology, right? Like I lived in a world before I practiced derm before we had Apoquil. So yes, I'm older than I look. So I've been in that world. And we're always a bit limited on what we have with cats, but topical barrier function along with these allergy medications is really important, right? So we want to restore the skin barrier and, of course, decrease the itch. But something that does help with compliance, you guys have ever had experience with, is a Tobevec collar.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So have you used that and something you can use in dogs or cats to help the skin barrier?
Yeah, definitely the same thing, you know, as far as just a kind of something you put them on and, you know, it helps them out and the owners don't have to give like an oral medication or put something in the ear. I definitely think that that makes the owners really happy. And then again, as a pet owner, that would also make me very happy as well.
The nice thing about a Tobevec collar is it's you set and forget and it's for 2 months. So I've had a lot of cats that have been really successful. They have a hard time medicating them. You know, it's not going to be the equivalent of like an allergy medication, but it has been shown to reduce some itch in some of these cats, especially if they're mild to moderate and with their pruritus. And it can really help to restore skin barrier. And then they just have to replace it every 2 months. And they have it available for dogs as well. So it is another option that you potentially can use for that. Our world's expensive. And allergies are very expensive. Mm-hmm. So there are certain products, say if someone cannot just jump into all of the medications that can be used, like as far as supplements or using fatty acids. Do you guys ever see those used in your particular practice for cases either that want to use it concurrently with a medication like Apoquil or just for cases that maybe have some cost concerns?
Yeah, supplements are definitely a good starting point for clients that have financial concerns or are worried about getting their pets started on just medication in general. So it's a good way to kind of meet the client halfway and let's say, yeah, let's go ahead and try this, give it for a few months, see how it works. And then if not, we can either switch our treatment plan completely or add it in and see if adding in this additional anti-itch therapy can help with the current supplements and see how those work out together.
Do you think what's really important when we talk about supplements is making sure there's a lot out there, a lot of supplements. I get like ads all the time on my social media, is making sure we stick to ones that are actually have research and literature behind them. that they can actually help. Because unfortunately, allergies are expensive and owners can end up wasting a lot of money on things that are not helpful. Mm-hmm. Before we take questions from the audience, I want to ask one last question. And that is, what do you think has really changed the most about how you view veterinary medicine since being like in dermatology?
For me, I would say that it's knowing that there are so many different options out there to treat allergies. And because at least when I was in school, it was just steroids and cyclosporin, and we call it a day with that. But now I'm seeing all these new therapies come out and seeing how many more options there are available for our patients that help us be able to try to tailor the treatment plan to their pet. So if Fluffy doesn't do well with this liquid medication, okay, let's try this other anti-itch therapy, see if that works out for them a little bit better. And it's nice seeing all these new treatment plans coming out in the last probably 10 or so years.
Yeah, it's cool. And probably more cool things to come. It's been really awesome. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Definitely being in dermatology has made me just look at things differently. And I, one of my favorite parts, like I said earlier, just kind of seeing them come back and how well they look and just kind of seeing that progression, but just also seeing how comfortable they look after and just really being able to have that relationship with the client as well. Since, you know, we said, allergies and stuff like that tends, you know, is long term. So I always like building that relationship with clients and the patients.
I have actually one last question before we take questions from the audience. What do you think has allowed you to feel, since you guys have worked in derm the last few years, the most empowered about derm cases? Like, is there a specific thing you've learned, a way you've handled communication that just makes you feel as a technician more empowered with these cases?
Honestly, one of my favorite parts other than fungi is client communication and education. I really enjoy being able to communicate all my knowledge that I've gained in the last almost 10 years and being able to share it with them. And especially at the initial consultations, there's a lot of information that gets thrown at them in the hour visit that they're here with us. And I always like to make sure that they know that I'm here for them and try to echo my doctor's words and his treatment plan and thoughts. And I try to act like a extension of his brain. And so a lot of the clients that come through for that first visit, they can be overwhelmed and it's very understandable, but I really enjoy being able to communicate with them and develop these relationships with them. And because we're going to be in it for the long haul. So I want to make sure that they know that they can be comfortable with me coming to me with questions and know that I will be an effective communicator between them and the doctor too.
Client communication is huge. Here's really our extensions of us. Because, you know, I know you guys get a lot of the questions, like once I leave, then they're like, oh, but I didn't want to tell her this, but actually like, can you ask her this? Or I said I was bathing. I'm not, you know, I know that you guys get a lot of that. What about you as far as feeling empowered with dermatology cases?
Definitely just, yeah, like being able to communicate. And then, you know, also just sometimes being honest, you know, if the owner has a great question that I'm not even sure about, I was like, you know what, let me go ahead and ask the doctor and, you know, we'll both kind of learn from what's going on from this. So I definitely love that I could go ahead and have that type of relationship with the client and make them feel comfortable about asking a question, you know, whether I know the answer or not at that point.
I definitely learned even as a clinician, like it is okay to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that owners appreciate that more versus like trying to stumble my way to a made up answer. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, I don't know. You know, we don't really know at this point. There's research being done. That's a great question. I'll have to consult with my colleagues because, yeah, none of us are perfect to know every little thing. We certainly can ask questions that challenge us. Mm-hmm. So that is awesome. What wonderful questions do we have from our people? Come on. I know you got some good ones. Mm-hmm. If she is sampling cytology, which, yay, that you're even doing cytology. Like, that already makes my little germ happy. My germ heart so happy. So if she is sampling, like, a dry, scaly lesion, What tips do you guys have just to feel like she's getting a better sample or that she's getting more representative sample of what's going on the skin?
I'd say definitely putting that edge of the slide to use, because if you just put the sample or the slide on the sample and smush it, you're going to get a smushed sample. But if you really angle the slide downward towards the skin and then you kind of go and do this curve motion upward, then that helps take off some of the, if there's a little bit of crusting there, it helps remove some of that layer, and then you can really get that nice sample underneath that crust, and that'll help stick to your slide a little bit better.
Yeah, I love that. Edge of the slide is huge. Mm-hmm. I always, when I'm teaching veterinarians, say you want to take, like, those dry cellular lesions are hard because you don't sometimes have a crust and a bunch of moist debris underneath. But definitely using the edge of the slide as leverage is super important. And just to make sure you're, like, pretty firm with all your fussing too. I'm a big direct impression smear person, so I'm, like, aggressive and smearing a lot. The other thing that I would just say from my standpoint that can be helpful with psychology is using your non-dominant hand to also help bring up the skin. So sometimes I see, like, if it's a truncal lesion, people will take the slide and just kind of, you know, swoop it and that's it. But you really have to kind of have firm pressure to get a good sample on those dry lesions. So I will take my left hand, so I'm right-handed, I'll pinch the skin up gently so they're comfortable, but I'll actually take that as leverage so that I can kind of put pressure on both sides and get a better sample. If all in doubt and it's a dry, scaly lesion, and certainly you could always try taping. That's a lot of times when people will see you tape. So the question is, if we're talking about doing feline intradermal allergy tests, notoriously cats have thin skin and they can be quite difficult to do skin testing on. So what tips do you have for that?
Cats are tricky. They always are and always will be. but when I do a skin test, it's just a matter of getting that skin as taut as you can. And it's really, really easy to get that injection sub-Q instead of intradermal. So it's literally just the tip of that needle goes in, and I try to keep it as shallow as possible. If I can see 90% of that needle behind the skin, I know I'm in the right spot. And it's really just practice, patience, frustrating patience, and just not giving up and keeping at it, because cat skin is very, very slippery
in so many ways. And they are really, really tricky. I know for a lot of my technicians, even doing cat skin tests, and we do a decent amount, like, it's also not abnormal to, of all the 64 blebs they put in, they're going to have some of those go sub-Q. So it's like putting a little in, seeing if you're getting that good bleb. If not, backing out, just retrying. So a lot of times it's something that even my technicians who've been doing it for a very long time, like, it still happens, right? It's kind of like I get a cytology slide. Sometimes it's not good and I have to redo it. So that's okay. Can you guys, just bouncing off that question, do you guys do IV fluorescein testing for mm-hmm. your cats? Can you just explain what that is? Because I know it's not something everybody does. But for those of us who do IV fluorescein testing, kind of explain why we do it in cats and what your experience has been with it.
So with the fluorescein stain, that helps us see the actual skin test and the reaction that on the skin from the cats, because their skin doesn't react the same way that dogs' skin would for a test. Dogs that have nice little round red blebs for each poke that we give, but cats, you give the poke and or you give the injection and it's there and then it immediately disappears. So we use the fluorescein stain. It's given IV and through a catheter. You got to make sure that it goes IV, all of it. And you got 15 minutes to get your 84 injections done. So we power through it, get it done. And then the doctor goes in with the black light and lights off, look at everything and see how brightly the skin fluoresces once that 15-minute timeline is up. And then they're able to make that decision of, yes, this is a, you know, reaction to malassezia. No, it's not. And that's the only way that we can be able to see it.
You can do cat skin tests without fluorescein. It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. Not everyone does it. Some people don't even like doing cat skin tests as far as dermatologists go. But it can be extremely helpful. And then you already heard we have different amounts of allergens we test. So like where I'm in Portland, Oregon, our skin test only has 64, whereas you guys are doing 84. Mm-hmm. So kind of just depending on cross reactions, the regional location, there can be variations with that as well. So the question is about Duxo, the product. Just we've mentioned mousses before. And I think when we were chatting, it was a kind of a universal statement about like mousses, because there are different products. We've mentioned Trisclor-4, which is a 4% pyrexine product. But you guys want to speak at all to some of the benefits of other products like a Duxo product?
Yeah, like as far as the different like mousses and wipes, we like to have that option for the clients. And just like you said, just seeing what's easy for them to apply. Like sometimes a mousse is nice with those really like hairy, furry patients, because that could really kind of make a little bit better contact with the skin. Or the wipes are really nice for like claw folds, just depending on different areas and things like that.
And the Duxo product in general, like the differences, there's wonderful topical products all over the place. That one in particular is the line that has something called Ofitrium in it. And Ofitrium is a skin barrier restorant, and there's different percentages depending on the product that you're using. Fizz 4-4, like what we mentioned earlier, that has a higher percentage for hexidine. So Duxo-5 has 3%, Trisclor-4 has 4%. So, you know, depending on what you're treating or what you're trying to accomplish, sometimes a higher percentage for hexidine might be more beneficial. And to their point, Trisclor-4 comes in numerous formulations. But we also love to, as dermatologists, often prescribe like topical products even when they're not infected. Mm-hmm. So maintenance products can be huge. So Duxo would have like Duxo Calm. Decor would have like Dermalay. So I do think that there is also a ton of benefit to frequent maintenance therapy just to remove pollens off the skin so they don't absorb as much, restore that skin barrier so that we can protect it. So the question is really diving into cases where the general practitioner has done a great job working them up, doing all the things that it's in the capability of their hands to do, but we all have difficult cases, and the case is not responding, and the technician and the veterinarian to the point where they say, we really need you to go see derm. Like, you know, we don't really know what else we could do here, but the client is reluctant either from financial reasons or bandwidth reasons or being busy. So what would be some recommendations if you guys were back in the general practice world that you could give to kind of make them feel a bit better that a referral to derm could be beneficial for their pets?
Yeah, I think I would make it obviously very clear to them that we've been trying to deal with this issue for however many months or even years. And, you know, saying as a practitioner, I've done this, I've done all these different routes, and they've either not done anything or it's helped a little, and then we take two steps back. So I think it would be important to just try to help them understand that I've done everything I can. You really got to go to them, even if it's just doing the consultation, getting an idea from the dermatologist what a plan could be, because, you know, you won't know unless you try. So they could even just go for the consultation, find out what plan A, B, C could be, what options there are, because like Dr. Bougeron said, it can be very expensive. But there are ways to treat our skin and ear conditions without having to break the bank. So it's definitely worth having, at the very least, that consultation done to see what options are available.
I think the biggest thing, from a clinician standpoint, that I hear referring vets kind of say when they're really trying to convince someone is we want to see if we can get to the root of the cause. Like, why are these infections happening? You know, not just to treat the infections, you've probably done a fine job at that, but really getting to the why, which can be hard, especially if you are short on time. And I know you're very busy in general practice, right? You're not going to set an hour aside for an initial consult like I am, because I know I'm going in the weeds to have that conversation, and my technicians are going in the weeds to have that conversation. So I think root of the cause, but I do love what you mentioned. Even in a specialty clinic, we work with all sorts of budgets, expectations, right? Like, we love allergy testing. Not every owner allergy tests. Mm-hmm. For various, like, they can't afford it. It's not in line with what they want to accomplish with their pet. So I do think it's important for them to realize, like, I love it. Like, just have that consultation and see what, and I do that for other specialties. I'm like, you're scared of surgery. But it's probably really important. Just go have a conversation with the surgeon and then we'll go from there. I think that's great advice. So the question is about intradermal allergy test versus serum test and, you know, benefit of referring versus maybe doing it within a general practice clinic.
Definitely depends which dermatologist to talk to. Yeah. Even at our clinic, some of our dermatologists say, you know, there's no difference between blood versus skin test, or others say, no, gold standard is to do both. I always tell the clients it's whatever you can affordably do and want to do. So if the doctor is recommending both, but it's, you know, a $1,200 bill for testing alone, like that's going to break the bank for most people. So if they can only afford to do one versus the other, we'll still get good results from the blood tests and the skin tests. And sometimes even doing both can help the doctor really narrow down the results that they get, because sometimes we'll get our lovely pitties will be reactive to 78 of the 84 injections, and their blood allergy test shows slightly different results from the skin test. So they'll know, okay, these all cross react, or I can combine these and then make this ultimate allergy immunotherapy vial for them. But as far as, you know, effectiveness, one versus the other, they're more or less equal to each other. It's just a matter of what can you do and how much information you want.
It can be very difficult to do immunotherapy studies because there's so many variables. So there are some out there, but it can be really tough, right? Because a lot of times we're still managing a lot of these flares in the middle of it. And what does success look like? A lot of times success is not your off-all medications. It could be instead of 5 breakouts a year, you're down to 1. It could be you're not getting worse as you get older. So there is a lot of discussion and controversy in the derm world about that. I am a dual person, so if I'm able to, I'll do both. But I will say, however you get that information, whether it's serum testing, skin testing, or both, there is a lot of variation and knowledge that has to go into managing immunotherapy. So there have been some studies that have actually looked at management of immunotherapy in general practice versus a specialty practice, and that can be more successful in a specialty practice. But I don't know that it's necessarily magical what's going in it as much as all the other stuff. Like sometimes we change frequency, we change amount, we change the medications they're on. That being said, if they're not going to see a dermatologist for whatever reason, or it's not available to you, I truly think you can do immunotherapy successfully in general practice. And I think we have to make it realistic for clients that they're not all going to see a specialist. So the fact that you can do and learn about it, I think is awesome. All right, let's give it up for 2 guests. This is so wonderful. So again, we want to thank Dekra for sponsoring this episode of the Bet Blast podcast. We want to thank all of our lovely technicians for being here and just really wanting to dive in to learn more. Hopefully you saw all that you can accomplish in dermatology as a technician, be empowered with that. And we just want to thank you all for being here.
Duotic, important safety information. As with all drugs, side effects may occur. Duotic is for otic use in dogs only. Do not use in cats. Do not use in dogs with known tympanic perforation. Do not use in dogs with a hypersensitivity to terbinafine or corticosteroids. Do not administer orally. Use with caution in dogs with impaired hepatic function. In a field study and post-approval experience following the use of a similar product, Osurnia, chlorpheniclone, terbinafine, betamethasone acetate, the most common adverse reactions were elevated alanine aminotransferase, conjunctivitis, ocular discharge, ear pruritus, deafness, ear discharge, pineal irritation and ear pain, emesis, head shaking, internal ear disorder, head tilt and vestibular, ataxia, vocalization, corneal ulcer, keratoconjunctivitis sicca, nystagmus, tympanic rupture, and cranial nerve disorder, facial paralysis. The safe use of Duotic has not been evaluated in dogs that are pregnant, lactating, or intended for breeding. Duotic may cause eye injury and irritation. Duotic should be administered by a veterinary professional. Wear eye protection when administering Duotic and restrain the dog to minimize post-application head shaking. Refer to the prescribing information for complete details or visit www.dekra-us.com.
Zen Alpha, important safety information. As with all drugs, side effects may occur. For use in dogs only, not intended for use in cats, not for use in humans. Avoid skin, eye, or mucosal contact. In case of accidental oral intake or self-injection, seek medical advice immediately and show the package insert to the physician. Do not drive, as sedation, loss of consciousness, and changes in blood pressure may occur. People with cardiovascular disease and pregnant women should exercise special caution to avoid exposure. Uterine contractions and decreased fetal blood pressure may occur after accidental systemic exposure. As with all alpha-2 adrenoceptor agonists, onset of sedation may be delayed or may be inadequate in some dogs. The analgesic effect of Zen Alpha will not last longer than the sedative effects. Additional analgesics should be administered as needed. Do not use Zen Alpha in dogs with cardiac disease, respiratory disorders, shock, severe debilitation that have hypoglycemia or are at risk of developing hypoglycemia or are stressed due to extreme heat, cold, or fatigue. Zen Alpha should not be administered in the presence of pre-existing hypotension, hypoxia, or bradycardia. Due to the pronounced cardiovascular effects of alpha-2 adrenoceptor agonists, only clinically healthy dogs, American Society of Anesthesiologists, ASA Classes 1 and 2, should be administered Zen Alpha. Dogs should be monitored frequently during sedation for changes in heart rate, blood pressure, respiratory rate, and body temperature. Tachycardia may occur in some dogs after recovery from sedation. The following adverse reactions have been reported: diarrhea, muscle tremors, and colitis. Refer to the prescribing information for complete details or visit www.decra-us.com.